Write that down for me, Slater. Write that down for me, Slater.
Hello from Burbank, California. Thank you for joining us for yet another episode of Write That Down. On the Fight Game Media Network, I'm Justin Nipper. I edit over at fightgamemedia.com. I write over at FOW Online, WrestlingObserver.com. I work for Pro Wrestling NOAH, Cyber Fight Inc. And this week, once again, I'm back with Mr. Fumi Saito, who happens to be Japan's leading pro wrestling author and historian and broadcast journalist and sociologist and all that good stuff. And on this week's episode, I'm stoked for this week's episode because we got to talk about the very special, very talented Adrian Adonis. And not only his time with WWF, I think probably that's what many of us think to first when we hear Adrian Adonis' name, but we spent a lot of time talking about his excellent work with New Japan back in the day, his whole career from the beginning until from working in territories like Portland, Oregon. We talked about his time in Amarillo, Texas, the Blanchards, when they were on television in USA before World Wrestling Federation, I think it was Southwest Championship Wrestling. We talked a lot about AWA, Adonis' time in AWA, East-West Connection, Jesse Ventura. Of course, we talked about his stint as the adorable one, WWF, and a lot in between. And I think that if you're not familiar with Adrian Adonis' work outside of the WWF, and you love great pro wrestling, you need to spend some time and check some of his work in New Japan out. At least. I say he's talented and special because not many that were his size were able to move as seamlessly, as silky smooth as Adrian Adonis. And not too many people were able to connect with audiences to a point where you could very clearly see fans losing themselves in the match because of his work. Frankly, I don't know how else to put it. I mean, in like a nice, soft, articulate way, but the fact that he's not as talked about is bullshit. Excuse my language, but I do feel that he is one of the main faces of that early WWF rock and wrestling boom. And the fact that we don't talk about him or appreciate him as much, and the fact that compounded with just the total tragedy of how he left us, it doesn't feel right. So doing this show, for me, it feels right. And I really hope that you learn something like I did from Fumi, and we can celebrate and talk more and more about Adrian Adonis' career. So on that note, let's do some plugs. If you have not already, please go and subscribe to the Fight Game Media Network podcast feed. It's on Apple, Spotify, Downcast, wherever you are listening to your podcasts. Hit the subscribe button, write a review. It helps us a ton. Okay, let's get into the life and times of Adrian Adonis.
People, if and when they want to know anything at all about anything, today you Google it and they'll lead you into Wikipedia first, right? Anyhow,
that's right.
And Wikipedia on Adrian Adonis doesn't even mention anything on his New Japan Pro Wrestling run,
which is a shame because he kind of has a different reputation over in
Japan. Oh, God, altogether. I mean, and in the one paragraph, New Japan Pro Wrestling, 1988, that was the very, very last tour Adrian had with New Japan Pro Wrestling, and it was 2 months before his passing, May of 1988. But in reality, Adrian had this regular tour between 82 to 85. In 3 year period, he had 11 tours with New Japan.
Jeez, so how many? So a tour would be about 6-8 weeks?
No, sometimes four weeks, sometimes 5 weeks, some short 3 week tour, but some like 7-8 week tour. So he was coming in like three tours a year for like a 4 year period.
Yeah, so it's regular. A significant amount of time. It's almost like
In Japan, and he enjoyed it. Yeah, because he doesn't have to drive in Japan. The bus is there and the hotel. I mean, all through this, 4 weeks, 5 week tour, that the hotel's already been booked. All you have to do is get to the lobby and get on the bus, and you be at the either hotel or building. When you get to the hotel, the office will check in for you, and they're just going to hand you the key to the room. And the next town goes, then just. It was really nice way to spend a 4 or 5 week tour just on wrestling. He doesn't have to worry about anything. And during the day, until you get to the building, you do your thing, in Japanese town, or find a gym that always let you work out there. And actually, he and Hulk Hogan were friends. They're both same age, 53. And Adrian was very comfortable working in Japan. Yeah.
And we got to see a different style of wrestling. We got to see Adrian Adonis go 100%, and the athleticism that he had, I guess it was natural because the way he moved, especially at that time, you couldn't compare him to many other wrestlers. Maybe like a Buddy Rose, Playboy Buddy Rose. But it's not
Cowboy Bob Orton.
Sure. You look at him and what to expect. I don't know what you could expect from and also.
Yeah, he didn't have bodybuilder, naturally. He did not have bodybuilder physique. We're not going to kid about that, But he could move.
He could move, and especially in Japan, he had the look of just a real-life tough guy from back then with the motorcycle, the leather.
Yeah, black leather. Yeah, rider's leather jacket. Yeah. And he had a leather hat too, first couple tours, and had a New York NY logo on his back. Mm. He really is from Buffalo, New York, And he was a football player and wrestler, and he went to college. And he was trained by none other than Fred Atkins, that tough guy. Fred Atkins was a trainer for Giant Baba's second tour in America. And also Fred Atkins was responsible for training Tiger Jeet Singh. He just doesn't train anybody. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Adrian's daughter told me one time that he had to beg Fred Atkins to train him. Then you have to lose 20 pounds before you come. You come to me. Then I might train you. Mm. Yeah. So I guess it's something to do with Italian heritage that eat a lot of carbohydrates or something. I don't know that it was easy for me. For Adrian to gain weight naturally. Some people like that, right?
Mm.
And later on in his career, right, he got really heavy, and then people remember his physique kind of almost round, but he wasn't like that always.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
And
Adrian's legacy has been overlooked, how talented he was, and he could move. And I want today's, YouTube generation people, going to YouTube and find his old matches. Yeah.
I think there might even be some of his on New Japan World.
Yeah, that too. Yeah. And some of the things that's not on New Japan World, like 1983, Adrian Adonis against Andre the Giant single match. Very even match.
Hmm.
Andre, though.
That should say a lot about kind of how special or how important he was in the ring back then. And
you could tell the way, Friday night New Japan Pro Wrestling on Channel 10, that the primetime TV they're doing. First week of the tour, they start out with like a six-man tag team situation in the main event. Adrian was in it and got put over. Second week, he's already had a single match against people like Fujinami. And third week on television, he had not the title match, but the single match main event against Antonio Inoki. It's like, wow, the company, you know, like Office, Inoki himself, Sakaguchi, Booker, they were all watching. Oh, we like this guy, right?
Hmm.
Yeah. It was actually, I pretty much followed Adrian's career a lot because he debuted 1974, okay? And the record shows that he was working under his real name, Keith Frank, very first. And he started out as WWF enhancement talent
mm-hmm.
in a few matches. Then you go into territory. Now that the Tales of Territories, right? You know, that's the right. Dark Side documentary, that people really finally learning about there was such thing as territories, that every state had their, not the state, but every area, in the geographic area had their good sized wrestling company that travels and they have their own TV, you know. And Adrian went to Pacific Northwest, you know, Oregon, Portland, Seattle, mm-hmm. you know, Tacoma and Yakima, that the West Coast. And he was still Keith Frank, you know, but he had worked with people like a young Roddy Piper, you know, these years before they were like a real polished superstar with WWF plate, but they had these, you know, younger talent. They were so hungry and wanted to work 7 days a week, just have a lot of matches under their belt. You know what I'm saying?
Mm.
And you actually become your own person and you eventually become your own character. And Oregon was such a place. And you can find old footage of Pacific Northwest too, you know, younger Piper, younger Adrian at Keith Frank, or people like young Rick Martel, that all these people work in Oregon, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's a smaller territory, but you can work 7 days a week and actually only have like a 12, 14 guys in the territory, but you do work with one another so many times that you actually get this rhythm and you know what I'm saying, like you really develop your own style and finding out what style you want to go or what you want to do or how you want to portray yourself. You just have to talk to yourself. Would you want to be a scientific wrestler, or you want to be a brawler, or you want to be cheating kind of guy, or you know what I'm saying? And Adrian started becoming more Adrian Adonis. Then he went down to West Coast, you know, Mike LaBelle territory, Olympic Auditorium, you know, that's when Japanese magazine gets a lot of photos, because there was a photographers in the LA area, every Olympic Auditorium photos that at the Olympic Auditorium was on Japanese magazine all the time. Then we, you know, see the name, Keith Franks, put an S on it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Keith Franks.
Yeah, real name is Frank, but ring name in California was Keith Franks. I don't know, maybe somebody misspelled it on program and kind of stuck. I don't know, like Mr. Pogo, you know. I don't know who it was, but his name was Keith Franks. Then he went down to Amarillo, Texas, became Adrian Adonis when Terry Funk was the promoter.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that interesting?
Which year was this? By the
77, 78, around there?
77, yeah. 78.
Yeah, when he became Adrian Adonis. You know, Adrian Adonis is Adonis, you know, like your Adalia, you know, Italian ocean, you know,
mm-hmm.
sea. And Adrian, you know, is like a Greek god. You fall in love with yourself, you know? Yeah. And it's a perfect, you know, wrestling name, I think. Adrian Adonis, you know, something Terry Funk could come up with.
And what was his personality or character like at that time when he was in Amarillo? Did he change it a little
bit? I think he was becoming like a young cocky heel.
Okay.
Yeah, real cocky, you know, snotty, you know, heel, but it's like extension of himself a little mm-hmm. bit. Yeah.
I get what you mean.
Yeah. Oh, cuz I was told by Terry Funk, and he tells that a lot of people, that the wrestling character has to be the extension of real self, exaggeration. You have to have it in you first. Then you can, you know, make, you know, kind of exaggerated, exaggerate the part of yourself. And Adrian was snotty, cocky, like spitting, spit in somebody's face. I mean, just
arrogant, real disrespectful.
Snotty heel. Yeah. And what caught Terry Funk and Terry Torres' eyes was that they were doing old-fashioned take on all-comer thing. Mm-hmm. Like a fan to have, have fan get in the ring and, wrestle this guy. And, if you can last 5 minutes, I'll give you money, kind of thing. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Adrian was doing it. So that's tough guy. Because you never know what kind of drunk, well, not the drunk, but the, ex-football player or somebody, some tough guy from local bars, or you really never know in America what kind of guy will get in the ring with you.
Yeah, and back then it was also a time where no one really knew what a true fight looked like. It was still a time where what we saw in the movies on our TV was different from what...
Oh, the fist fight?
Yeah. So... Yeah. I think that building that image of a tough guy was even more important back then. And when you apply it to pro wrestling, I think Adrian Adonis with that look.
Yeah, and actually people didn't really acknowledge it, but he was high school state champion type wrestler.
Mm. He could really move. He could move pretty smoothly. Yeah. And
also tough enough to go into college football and living in the fraternity house. How hard they party,
right?
Do the practice, and just you're the king of the campus, sometimes football player in college, you're the popular guy, or most hated guy,
right?
Yeah, and he was college football fraternity type person, and he carried that, and I think he was perfect fit for Amarillo territory. Amarillo, Texas wasn't exactly big territory, but it attracted like a tough guy, beer drinking male audience, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he was doing take on all comer thing, and he wasn't even all that famous then. He was just becoming Adrian Adonis. Yeah, and 78 means that he was like 25 then still.
Was he talking on the microphone at this point, or is he just...
Not really. I don't think so. But I haven't really watched, if it exists even, that the Amarillo Territory TV show. Yeah, I don't know if he was talking.
Hmm.
But a little bit later on, it kind of gives me the hint. With we'll talk about that later on. But he had two different runs with WWE, right?
Mm-hmm.
Initially, when Bob Backlund was champion, after his AWA run, both Adrian Adonis and Jesse the Body Ventura went to WWF as a single competitor. Those two are East-West connection, and they were AWA tag team champions. But when Vince McMahon Sr. called, that they broke the team up, and each individual, Jesse Ventura and Adrian Adonis as a single guy, they both challenged Bob Backlund's title. That tape exists. Good match. What I'm talking about is with this WWE environment, WWF at the time, Adrian was managed by people like Bobby Heenan one time, Freddie Blassie at one point, Jimmy Hart one point, Lou Albano, Sir Oliver Humperdinck, or in AWA, young Paulie Dangerously.
Hmm.
So he always had manager, seemed like.
That was the style back then, especially for, who was viewed as the top heel, top bad guy in the company,
yeah,
in the territory.
Yeah. But the WWE run was champion Bob Backlund, like old-fashioned, before Hulk Hogan era, that have people like Freddie Blassie and Lou Albano as your manager, that's top heel.
Mm.
Mm. Single top heel. Yeah, so he, with WWE, yes, he... always had manager, so he wasn't the master of promo, right?
Hmm.
In AWA, East-West Connection, Jesse Ventura and Adrian Adonis, Jesse Ventura was the one doing all the talk.
Hmm.
Yeah, hmm. So I guess, but then again, when Adrian worked for South San Antonio, Texas, Southwest, mm-hmm. that Joe Blanchard, Tully Blanchard's father, mm-hmm. Joe Blanchard's territory. He was single guy and he was running, you know, cutting his own promo too. So he maybe was able to do the promo, but someplace they put the manager on him, and so he didn't have to do the talking. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, rewind the tape a little bit. That the Amarillo territory, when he became Adrian Adonis, I'd say late 77 into 78. That's when he was taking all comer, like your, you know, tough guy in the ring, and take this guy down and chew him, and today's word, guillotine him. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
So he was able to do that. And then back then, about a year or so, year or 2 years, you stay in territory, then you move on into another territory. That was the territory days, right?
Mm.
Yeah. And then summer of 79, he came to AWA finally as Adrian Adonis. And I was there at the building. He was, the night he came to AWA, he worked opening match, mm-hmm. opening match. The finish was elbow drop off the second rope and spinning toe hold like Terry Funk's.
Mm.
And people tap out or give up. And spinning toe hold, you know, Terry Funk, Dory Funk style. Spinning toe hold wasn't the move AWA wrestlers were doing at the time.
Yeah. How would you describe the AWA style? It was more of like a bigger guy's territory.
It's a very simple Vern Gagne formula that each and every name wrestler have their own finish, or they always do, and people don't kick out of people's finish. And it was simple formula, who would be the next challenger for Vern Gagne, or who would be the next challenger for Nick Bockwinkel, and your next big show at the St. Paul Civic Center is, or the Salt Lake City, or Milwaukee, Green Bay, you know what I'm saying? That they had this programming, sort of. And a lot of times, it's like AWA was a kind of company, same crew would be traveling city to city to city. See, like in NWA cities, like Iowa, the Kansas, that Missouri, that they have wrestlers coming in and out, right?
Hmm.
But the AWA was more like a package deal, like a Japanese company, that the package roster of AWA guy, 25 guys, would be traveling, you know, city to city, and basically giving the same card. Kind of WWE, huh?
Right. I was just going to say, I think this was kind of the template for what WWE or WWF at the time would become.
84 on.
Because at that time, I don't know if WWF was touring much outside of the Northeast area.
No, they weren't.
So I think this... what would you call it? Strategy, promotional strategy that AEWA had with like a package. It was like, it was the company and Vern Gagne were the main draws.
Just the floor, you know, a couple floor below AEWA's office in Wayzata, Minnesota, there was a travel agent, All Star Travel. They handled all the wrestlers traveling. So they all had the plane ticket ready for you.
Mm.
You know, then it's a very modern way to run the wrestling company, right?
I think so.
Yeah. But all in all, Adrian came in and worked the first match, the very first night. But the second week on, he moved up the card pretty much right away. And so Vern Gagne must have liked him. But then he had to move from wherever he was then, that he had to come to Minnesota and move. You know, then he was living in Burnsville, Minnesota. This is because they make you move to the city because we'll be, you know, working five nights a week here, kind of thing.
And you two crossed paths in Minnesota, didn't you?
Minnesota, of course. And actually, Adrian Adonis and Jesse Ventura, those two were the very first one. I was 19-year-old puppy photographer in the ringside. The Vern didn't even believe that I was working for the magazine. You know what I'm saying?
Hmm.
Yeah, and then also they had the people in dressing room, the Crusher, Mad Dog Vachon, Baron Von Raschke, Sheik Adnan. It's like, oh my gosh, they're seniors, right?
Right. And you were kind of freaked out, or were you nervous?
Oh, no, they were superstars, of course, but they consider Jesse Ventura and Adrian Adonis, or they're just punks at the time.
It's funny how you know, history.
I'm talking about like things 40 years ago. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You know, because Crusher's gone, Vern's gone, the Mad Dog's gone. You know that. It's just so many. Oh, even Mr. Bakwengo, that all those Ray Stevens, Pat Patterson, you know, come in sometimes. That they, yeah, all those AW legends are gone, and their prime were like 40, 50 years ago, right?
Mm.
But AWA was kind of senior league that they still had Vern, Mad Dog as tag team, the Crusher come in, Baron von Raschke, all those older guys. Then in the dressing room, like more like a backstage area, Adrian and Jesse Ventura were the youngest ones. Then next youngest one was like a Greg Gagne and Jim Brunzel, you know? And young Kurt Hennig was still referee right out of high school. Isn't that
interesting? That's right.
I mean, like, 5-6 years before he was Mr. Perfect, you know what I'm saying? Kurt Hennig became AWA champion first, you know, after all these guys left for WWF, you know, with Hulk Hogan. And they wanted to make Kurt Hennig champion, right? But WWE wanted to sign Kurt Hennig right away, and his father, Larry, said, no, don't go, you know. And, but they couldn't, AWA couldn't pay them any more than $1,500 a week, you know, something like that, you know. Mm-hmm. But Kurt Hennig had to wait to sign with WWE until like 87.
Mm.
The Adrian and Jesse, I mean, now today's, you know, if this, you know, today's audience hear this, you know, it's like, oh, no way, right? But actually, Adrian Adonis and Jesse Ventura were the youngest guys in the dressing room.
Mm.
You know, because you have Vern Gagne, the Mad Dog Vachon, the Crusher, the Baron von Raschke, all this is like a senior wrestlers, right? With promoter Warwick Cobble or somebody, you know? Yeah. And it was like, you know, of course I stood with my camera on I was holding it and all scared and standing in the hallway, right? Not being able to talk to anybody. And Adrian was the one. Adrian said, come on over. And then start talking. Oh my gosh, great, you know? Yeah.
Now, did they really treat you like a outside reporter, or did they treat you like one of the fans, or what was it like when you were backstage with Adrian?
Oh, when I was like a 1920?
Yeah.
They were really friendly and nice about it. You know, it wasn't really total kayfabe or anything like that. Mm. Vern was the one who was like a complete kayfabe, you know, environment, you know, and they wanted to keep.
Mm.
Adrian and Jesse was like a rebel within that, you know, environment. And Adrian was the only one friendly. And also, he just came in territory and he was young. And compared to like I said, Vern or Mad Dog Vachon or the Crusher or Nick Bockwinkle, Ray Stevens, they treated him like a rookie too. You know, some green guy, right?
Mm.
And the babyface side rookie was Steve Olsnowski and Paul Ellering. Later on, he became Precious Paul, remember? Mm-hmm. Yeah, but he was still babyface. But like a first match, second match, rookie kind of guy. And like I said, Kurt Hennig, young Kurt Hennig, right out of high school, he was still referee then. Yeah. So Adrian and Jesse Ventura was really friendly. And I was really happy that, I can talk to these guys. And it was really, he was the one who was, you know, being really friendly. Yeah. And I was, you know, that fortunate enough to witness that those two climbing up the ladder, you know, that all of a sudden, Jesse Ventura and Adrian Adonis, they were put together as a tag team, East-West Connection, you know, because Jesse Ventura was built that he's from Venice Beach, California or something, right? Mm-hmm. And Adrian Adonis from New York City, New York, then East-West Connection, well, perfect. And they were challenging then AWA tag team champion Vern Gagne and Mad Dog Vachon. And they were flying all over the place. You know what I'm saying?
Mm.
Body, you know, like a back body drop doing an easy move, but, you know, like a Vern Gagne doesn't, you know, have this strength move, right? maybe like a nice timing head in hip toss, but you won't do the big body slam or, you know, big suplex that takes strength, you know, but it was a more of a timing thing that the Adrian walked right into the move, you know, and then taking big, you know, one big move after another. And I studied him, you know, it's like, wow, right? And when you were a kid, you're getting beat and he's no good, right?
Mm.
If you, when you start watching wrestling from like a 4 feet away, it's like, wow, this is how this like Adrian walks right into people's move and take perfect bumps, you know? And that's how talented he was, the timing wise and the way he sells it. And when the Larry the X came in, the way he, you know, make face like all scared and all these things, like, wow, I just learned so much from him, my being in the ringside. And it's like, I forgot to take pictures. I just watched these guys and studied, you know. And actually, pretty soon, about a year later, Adrian and Jesse Ventura were main event status. And they didn't, see, Vern Gagne and Mad Dog Vachon didn't really drop the title to those two. That either Vern or Mad Dog, I forgot, but there was supposedly injured. And title up for grab vacant, then AWA president Stanley Blackburn or something like that will come on TV and that award the title to Jesse Ventura and Adrian Adonis. Therefore, they became AWA Tag Team Champion. And I believe it was the first major title for both guys, you know?
Hmm.
Yeah, like 26-year-old Adrian, 28-year-old Jesse Ventura. That was their first major title. Yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah, they both pretty much exploded from that point after. I mean, they both took different paths, but they got very popular from that point.
Yeah, and then famous. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So they got along, you know, got along just fine first, you know, couple years, but eventually they told me, I don't know what happened, but they weren't really enjoying the tag team and they wanted to go separate way. And sure enough, when they went to New York, be a challenger of Bob Backlund, they were, you know, promoted to a singles, you know, singles wrestler. Adrian had a program against Bob Backlund. Jesse had a program against Bob Backlund. And Jesse Ventura was the, you know, one of the very first one to sign and get signed away by Vince McMahon, mm-hmm. you know, while he was still working AWA, and AWA was advertising him to be on the show. But sure enough, that Vince McMahon stole Jesse Ventura from them. And yeah, they were running Jesse Ventura against Hulk Hogan program. And we cannot forget that fact that Hulk Hogan before WWF, he was working AWA for 2 years, you know, 82, 83. So those three were like really pretty tight at one point. Yeah. And it's like, let's go to New York together kind of thing. Yeah. Because they were becoming like 80s superstar, right? I'm talking about this like an 82, 83 period. So they were looking in like this decade is their decade. Yeah.
And it they was all became, during this yeah. time that Adrian was traveling back and forth to Japan. Was that before or after?
It was after, because he had to go to WWE first and have Bob Backlund program. That brought him to New Japan. Because New Japan and Vince McMahon Sr. had a partnership. All those challengers who challenged Bob Backlund, like a 3 Madison Square Garden show, remember? Like a 3 months in a row? Are you with me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, I remember that.
New challenger come in and beat champion for the count out, you know, finish or something. And second, like a double DQ with juice or something. And then 3rd month, you have like a final meet.
Yeah, that was the pattern.
Wasn't it though? Yeah. And then it's a premiere. Then go on the road show, like go to Philadelphia or Baltimore or Poughkeepsie or the Buffalo or East Coast town, you know, or cities, big cities.
Too, yeah, Northeast like territory. Pittsburgh.
Yeah, yeah. Then after that, you know, some guys stay, but usually these that your designated challenger for the champion at the time kind of leave, right?
It's it would just the same cycle would start again with maybe different faces, but
Sure. Sergeant Slaughter come in, or Big Bob Bobby Duncan come in, or Magnus Pettersson Morocco come in. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, it was like that. And after they finished the Bob Backlund program, you go. It's time for you to go to Japan, And Adrian came in summer of 1982 with people like Rick McGraw and Greg Valentine, all this like New York, WWF type.
Did he was he in New Japan at the same time as Stan Hansen was, or had Stan Hansen already jumped to All
Already
Japan?
in W All Japan,
I
because
see.
Stan Hansen was with New Japan until the end of 81, I believe.
Okay.
And January of 82, they had program, I mean, Baba Stan Hansen program started that year. So yes, they didn't cross paths then. But the 82, summer of 82, it was after he left WWE, and he was working at the San Antonio Southwest Championship Wrestling, the Joe Blanchard. They wanted to create that World Heavyweight Championship with the championship belt look just like Harley Race belt, if you remember. Yeah, they had a tournament with people like Cowboy Bob Orton, Dirty Dickie Slater, the Bob Sweetan, or something like an 8-man singles, elimination, tournament, and Luthes honor you the world title, and Adrian brought the Harley Race model look like this globe belt to Japan, but the New Japan didn't recognize that, so it's like he wasn't able to wear that belt in the ring, but he brought that belt to Japan. So he was San Antonio, Texas version of world champion at one point. And useless trivia, but the Southwest Championship Wrestling of Joe Blanchard from San Antonio, Texas, that was the company that initially had the cable programming, like national television.
Right, they
And
were on USA.
yeah, the very program and time slot that Vince McMahon stole from him.
But it was originally for the Blanchard territories on USA when USA started, yeah.
So Adrian was that their world champion. An inaugural champion. Isn't that interesting? Because Vince sold the USA Network and took the time slot. They basically bought out, right? Then that eventually became your what the Real American Pro Wrestling. What was the name of the show? That the yeah,
All American Pro
All
Wrestling.
American Pro Wrestling. So people are watching the same time, same channel on cable, and then one night, just like your. What's the Dark Saturday? No, what's the name of, when you Atlanta TV, when they
Oh,
turn the
when the
TV on?
yeah the when W not Vince McMahon appeared on the television and they started
Like a
showing,
World Championship Wrestling,
yeah, and they started showing
double TBS. Was that Dark Saturday?
Black
What's the
Saturday or
name? Black
something.
Saturday, right. So just same thing. Months before that, Vince basically stole Southwest Championship Wrestling Joe Blanchard's TV program from him, and history is very interesting. Anyhow, that the Adrian was working after WWF. Adrian was working in San Antonio at the time, but he was already booked to Japan, and he didn't know what. But during his first tour in Japan, New Japan offered him next tour already.
So they liked him initially.
I guess they didn't really send videotape to the company, and they didn't know what to expect until the guy actually show up and work. And by watching Adrian work in the rings, like, oh, we like this guy, right? Yeah, because in Japanese wrestling, today they do, but there was no such thing as promo. You don't have a microphone, and run the angle or storyline or do the skit or anything. You just come to Japan and be on TV and have actual matches.
Right.
So your matches speaks for itself, and Adrian was perfect, and also again, the wrestling is like a the universal language, with no language barrier, that he can be cocky, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. In that ring, you know, he can work like really snotty, hate, you know, like a dislikable, you know, but then again, kind of almost cute, like a nasty cute.
He had a lot of character, and he could express a lot of himself without having to use any language. It was just in his wrestling
mm-hmm,
style.
Mm-hmm. And also that he was taking real creative bumps that the people understand right away.
Mm-hmm. And he was a pretty big guy to be moving like that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So he started having a regular tour with Japan and met people, you know. He was friendly with Japanese fans, you know, from like in Shinjuku Keio Plaza Hotel. If you walk around hotel lobby, Japanese fan would come up to you, ask for autograph, heel or babyface, right? And Adrian thought it was really interesting. You know, some of these kids skip school and waiting for wrestlers in the hotel lobby, right?
Right.
Yeah.
It was a little different over here with the you know, kayfabe and heels and babyface.
Yeah, or kick out all the fans from the lobby.
Mm, that's right.
Yeah. But, you know, same group of kids, you know, obviously skipping school. You know, sitting in Keio Plaza Hotel lobby waiting for, you know, Hulk Hogan, Adrian Adonis, Dick Murdoch, Andre the Giant and such, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Hulk Hogan, you know, talked to him and said, no, go to school, right?
Right.
Yeah, and then Adrian said, did you skip school? All right, let's go someplace. that's Adrian. It's like, but that's so real and friendly. I mean, I'm not saying skipping school is a great thing, you know, when you're in 10th grade or something, but they're so real that Hulk Hogan told these kids that, no, you go to school, right?
Mm.
What are you doing on Monday, right? But Adrian liked it. You skip school? All right, let's go someplace. And it was so Adrian. And then I guess those things will kind of translate, you know? And
attitude, character, the way you express yourself, not just by talking, but, you know, with your body language, all these things mm-hmm, come mm-hmm. into account more
and
so.
For those, you know, teenage fans, Adrian Adonis you met at hotel lobby, and Adrian Adonis, you know, you watch on TV, same guy. Mm. You know, yeah?
Yeah.
So that's also really, really like almost natural, you know, and people liked him. And he started having regular tour. And for early 80s, you know, his tag team, you know, the double combination moves with Cowboy Bob Orton, you know, like a guy's carrying, you know, one guy carrying, you know, your opponent on your shoulder and, you know, up on your shoulder, like going out atomic drop or something.
Mm-hmm.
And Adrian fly from top rope to give a clothesline on top of it, like a neck breaker, or you have guys on the pendulum style backbreaker, and Adrian come off top rope with elbow drop on him, or just some of the moves were adopted in WWE, you know, like years later, somebody's finish, like a demolition's finish or right. Islander's finish, you know. I'm talking about Tonga Kid and Haku. No, it wasn't Haku, then King Haku. Anyhow, but some of these tag team that adapted these certain moves that Adrian Adonis and Bob Orton created, and probably watched the video or something, and they really came up with a lot of new moves, probably experimented in Japan.
And these moves that we talk about, I mean, they're probably just, you know, commonplace. You don't even blink when you see them on TV today, but it was pretty innovative.
Somebody must have created it.
Yeah. And for the time, especially, it was creative. And it was kind of like adding like the modern wrestling vocabulary. They were kind of responsible
for
that.
Yeah. That's what I'm talking about. And even people like, you know, Ricky Choshu, Animal Hamaguchi tag team, Ricky Choshu, Yoshihaki Yatsu tag team, they start doing the same move too.
Hmm.
Yeah. So it's like, that's how innovative and creative Adrian Adonis was. Yeah,
it's simply just as a wrestler, not as a character, not as a talker.
He could move.
He could wrestle. Yeah. He was a wrestler's wrestler, and it seemed like
I think so.
It seemed like New Japan really sensed that in him when he came over.
Yeah, and it was like 10, 11 tours in 3 year period. It's like you had like you must have like a 4 tours a year for like a 3 year period. It's like keep coming back, right? Yeah. They had a like I said, Adrian Adonis against Andre the Giant single match situation. It was a very even match, and Andre then, you know, like 1982, 1983, Andre, he was able to move too.
That's right.
And yeah, they had a real good match. And single match against Inoki, very confident that, you know, of course Inoki will give you, you know, 1983, Inoki will give you the perfect enzigiri in the back of your head, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then this one flip, one, like he didn't have to do it, but like it's like a flip over, then yeah, take one.
That was kind of one, that was his signature. Yeah, like that little front somersault that,
yeah,
extra.
I mean, some of the people just take front bump, but for Adrian, you just make it extra spin.
And especially for someone like Inoki, where you know that it's going to be built to a point where if he does do it, it's going to have that extra oomph, the extra spice to.
Yeah, well, Inoki would never admit it, but he in his mind said, oh, I like this guy, right?
Right. It makes me look good.
Oh, the match looked spectacular, you know? Yeah, so it was, that was a time, I think all in all, that he started 74, right? So 75, 76, 78. That was like an eighth year, ninth year pro. So that must have been his prime.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah. So right off Bob Backlund program, you know? And got a falling out with Vern Gagne that he left, you know, Minneapolis too. And well, eventually went to New York. That's a better place, you know, and had a single program against Bob Backlund. That make you famous. And it would be on the cover of your Bill Apto magazine. And initially, East-West Connection, Jesse Ventura, Adrian Adonis became pretty popular that they were on cover of People magazine too, if you remember.
I don't remember that. What year was that? Yeah. 85, 86?
83. Yeah. So it was all before 1984 national expansion of Vince McMahon.
Okay.
But they were also part of national expansion roster.
Mm-hmm.
That Vince McMahon pretty much invited everything back, everybody back, you know, that the shaved head version of Bob Backlund, Adrian Adonis, Ken Patera, Jesse Ventura, not Jumping Jim Brunzel of High Flyers, but the Killer Bee, Jim Brunzel, that the Tito Santana, the old, the former AWA champion, but Rick Martel was one of them. And they wanted to have 100 people in roster, right? So Adrian and Jesse went back to WWE as of 84. But Adrian was still touring Japan all the way till like summer of 85, until Vince said nobody goes to Japan.
Yeah. And from there was the WrestleMania era, era of WWF.
Yeah, a little bit of tricky thing was though that the WrestleMania 1 was March of 85, right?
Mm-hmm.
After March, a couple more times, Hulk Hogan came to Japan with this Ichiban tights and silver, you know, boots on, and Adrian came back one more time too, until Bob Backlund came to Japan too, until no more Japan tour for, you know, WWE roster. Nobody but Andre. Andre kept coming back to New Japan until like pretty much summer of 86, because they didn't need Andre there at all time. Next time Andre came back to WWE full time, it was time to turn. And it was Saturday Night Main Event, that $1 million man buying belts, and you know, Andre challenging Hulk Hogan for a single match, WrestleMania 3, all these things. But until then, yeah, he was hidden, because you don't need Andre every week, right?
Right. He's a kind of special attraction.
Yeah, right, because he was like a traveling ambassador for the territory to territory all through 70s. And when Andre traveled all through, you know, 70s into early 80s, every territory, wherever Andre went, it was there super spectacular to have super battle royal, right, for the weekend.
Mm.
Yeah. So Andre get back to the subject, Andre was still coming to New Japan until like 86, but everybody else were gone pretty much, you know, that all the WWE superstar who used to came, you know, come to New Japan, they all kind of altogether disappeared. No more Hulk Hogan. Andre was there, but no Adrian Adonis, no Bob Backlund, you know, and it was like they had to, New Japan had to sign new deals, like world class. Then Kevin Von Erich and Kerry Von Erich start coming over, and they had to create new stars. Eventually they had Vader, Bam Bam Bigelow, and Scott Norton and whatnot, right? Mm-hmm. So it was like a changing, the end of an era, that the Adrian stopped coming over to Japan as of summer of 85. Then next time I saw him, he already had the gay gimmick in WWE. Yeah.
Yeah, in WWE, he became a character. He became completely different.
Oh, before I forget, that until then, Adrian Adonis and Dick Murdoch were a regular tag team in Japan.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. Then those two together went to WWE to be WWE tag team champion. But the Dick Murdoch hated the schedule and he left right away, pretty much. And came back to Japan.
They were kind of a similar. Dick Murdoch, in the same way, was like.
Yeah, I think so. Adrian Adonis, very similar. Yeah.
Big guy who could also move smoothly.
And so naturally talented. But yes. Didn't really have the drive to be your superstar. You know what I'm saying? Because he didn't really care about that, you know?
And there was always a real consistency anytime they were inside the ring. You could rely on somebody like that, it seemed like, especially in Japan, where you need somebody to go in for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, they almost looked like, you know, they could do this match without even trying.
Right.
You know?
There was something very natural about both how Dick Murdoch and Adrian Adonis wrestled.
Yeah, and then neither of them are bodybuilders.
Nope. But they do have that natural kind of tough guy vibe mm-hmm. about them.
Yep. And so like Dick Murdoch treated Adrian Adonis like a little brother, you know, the older, of course, you know. Yeah, so. Murdoch was a bit, you know, the generation older, but he did not want to have this WWE schedule, so he kind of went there but didn't stay long. But Adrian wanted to stay there, you know. And initially, I believed, you know, WWE or whomever creative that, you know, creative was at the time, they gave Adrian this gay gimmick to get him to quit.
Is that right?
That's what I heard, yeah. He hated the gimmick, and they make him do that, and eventually he might quit. I don't know.
Well, what's ironic about that is that he took this gimmick and he became so effective with it, and he got to a point where he would get so much heat from the crowd that he didn't really have to step into the match.
But he did
the ring.
But the Keith, you know, Adrian's wife didn't let, you know, their kids watch the show while
right.
He was
it was
doing
a different time. I mean, he
don't watch wrestling on TV, you know, but you're not gonna like what you see, you know, or just won't be good, you know, to watch dad's doing that, you know, because like he had to explain, right?
And he had a whole different look, and he had the makeup and the blonde hair and pink hair and the
pink
hats.
Trunks.
Sure.
Yeah.
Like eyeshadow.
Yeah, the whole lanyard. And eventually that the hair against hair match, and he get head shaped.
Ah, yeah. With the Brutus Beefcake?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. But he lasted in WWE until like end of 87. Yeah. Then he had a short stint with Dying Days of AWA, ESPN, that the Las Vegas showboard, if you remember.
No, refresh my memory on that. What was that about?
AWA had a national.
Oh, the AWA show. Yeah.
Went back to AWA for like a 5 months, 6 months, you know, dyed his hair back to normal, you know, brunette brown hair, and had a leather jacket back on. Pretty heavy, but the old Adrian Adonis, you know, made comeback of this ESPN show, AWA Las Vegas showboat TV taping, and he was there. That Kurt Hennig, Nick Bockwinkel, turned aged Bakwinko turned babyface and had a 60-minute match, you know, young Kurt Hennig against Nick Bakwinko around that time period. Adrian was back with AWA for a very short period of time. Yeah. 87? Yeah.
Must have been.
Then Then eventually in spring of 88, Adrian, you know, made his way back to New Japan. And it was welcome. But by then, Big Van Vader, you know, era had begun, though.
Ah.
Yeah, because he was putting Vader over clean, 1-2-3 in the middle of the ring during that tour. But he had, Adrian had very, very good attitude in spring of 1988. He was losing weight. He was working out. He was not drinking. And he, when he comes to Japan, he become very clean because nothing's tempting, right? Because when you come to Japan, you don't find anything.
Sure.
I mean, unless you work very hard. And what's the point, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. So when you come to Japan, all you have to do is, you know, you just think about the work and travel and work out, eat right, and have a good match. And you have no language barrier, no promo. You just go out there and wrestle. And he had like a new attitude. Like he was telling me that this summer I'm going in smaller territory, the maritime wrestling. Do you remember Rene Dupree? You know the SmackDown Tag Team Champion.
Sure. Yeah, he's in Pro Wrestling Noah now.
Oh right, him. His father, Emile Dupree. Mm-hmm. was running summer territory in New Brunswick in Eastern Canada area every summer. That summer territory was where he was spent that summer. You know, I'm going in smaller territory and work every day. And it's a great attitude, you know, don't even think about WWE, but the smaller territory or summer territory still existed. End of 80s, you know, then he booked himself to Canada, and July 4th, you know, the sun doesn't go down, right?
Mm-hmm. Like,
and then he was driving, you know, he wasn't driving, but it was on the van, and the big deer came out and was trying to, I guess, avoid the deer or something, and his truck went down in the cliff, and went all the way down to the river, and he and one half of Kelly Twins, Canadian Wildman, and like four guys died in a car accident on July 4th of 1988. Right when he had a great attitude, he was losing weight, working out, you know, clean, and he was going back to smaller territory and work every night, and just like all days, you know, it's just like a new attitude, you know, good attitude that I believe he would make big comeback. You know, he was only 34 when that happened.
It's way too young.
Oh, 34. So September 15th is his birthday. So it was before 35th birthday. So he was still 34. So young, right? Then, but he had 10-year run as a superstar too, you know, and the wrestler's life, you know, a lot of stuff happened, right? From New York City to Portland, Oregon, to Los Angeles, and a couple more territory, and went down to Amarillo, Texas, and went to AWA, went to New York, WWF run, then went to San Antonio, Texas, and had their local version of a world title. Then was brought into New Japan, and he had a 3-year run with New Japan, and went back to WWF and had that, you know, that period. And he came back to Japan at the, you know, the spring of 88. Oh, the whole, he went through so much, right? So he changed that he had such a good attitude. The hair is back to no more blonde hair, no more pink trunks, that he was back to, you know, writer's black leather jacket, and he wanted to work like he used to. And after summer, and I'll see you again. I'll be back in the end of summer. I mean, to New Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was the last time I saw him.
It's amazing to think about how much he accomplished in such a short time, being only 34. I mean, he made a pretty big impact in wrestling in the 80s.
Yeah, I think so. And he
such
was
a short
one of the
time in WWF.
One of
too.
The best at the time, you know, at one point. But people, I mean, basically like English-speaking area, you know, like American audience, don't remember that part of Adrian Adonis.
Well, unfortunately, because WWF was on such a major scale at the time, where they remember the gimmick, the adorable Adrian Adonis gimmick.
Yeah.
But his career, especially if you like watching someone you can consider a wrestler's wrestler, he really was that. And
yeah, so San Antonio footage, now. 82 footage, mm-hmm. 82, 83 footage, you know, from San Antonio, that him against Bob Orton, that the year earlier than that, Adrian against Bob Backlund, two matches at the Madison Square Garden, those two were good. Yeah. And some of the TV matches, of course, you know, that they taped 5 weeks of, you know, of TV at the time, right? Like old fashioned.
Mm-hmm. Poughkeepsie or Allen.
Yeah, yeah. Like all afternoon, all night, you know. So you can find a lot of Adrian match around that time period from that footage. And a lot of the Adrian match from New Japan, 82, 83, 84, that sometimes not on New Japan World. But sometimes you can find those. Somebody put that up on YouTube. You have to find it. But there are a lot of matches that you've never seen that Adrian's prime. That he was really good when he was really good. Yeah.
I think that's what I'm trying to get to. New Japan World. I think they might have the Inoki match. They might have. I can check right now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but I do believe there are, if you want to watch Adrian Adonis and
Dick Murdoch tag team situation?
Yeah, I believe so. Let me see what this pulls up. So if you have the New Japan
World... Can you search under Adrian Adonis?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. Or year.
So it looks like they have about 6 bouts on the streaming service, but they're from 83, 84, 85.
Okay, what are those?
So we have, like you said, we have Dick Murdoch versus Adrian Adonis, and Dick Murdoch and Adrian Adonis as a tag team against Fujinami and Kengo Kimura.
Oh, typical. Oh, that one should be good, yeah.
Or just Kengo Kimura versus Adrian Adonis in a singles match.
That's so Adrian, yeah.
Or Dick Murdoch and Adonis versus Choshu and Animal Hamaguchi.
Oh, that should be good, too.
Mm-hmm. I think there's
two heels.
One more, it looks like it's Inoki, Fujinami, and Kimura versus Dick Murdoch, Adrian Adonis, and King Kong Bundy, who appearance in the mid-80s.
Ah, okay. Yeah, King Kong Bundy was going to be another New Japan superstar, but Hulk Hogan apparently liked him, so it kind of took him.
Took him for WrestleMania 2, yeah.
Yeah, and made main event, yeah. So it was good for Bundy. But the Inoki likes King Kong Bundy so much that the very first tour of King Kong Bundy, it was tag team situation. But this 1985 version of Antonio Inoki put Bundy over clean, 1-2-3, in the ring. Mm. It doesn't happen too often, right?
No.
Yeah. Tag team match, though. But it was like, wow, that guy can pin Antonio Inoki. It's like that's an instant... Yeah, overnight.
That's a real deal. He's to be taken seriously.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because they had plans. But then again, if WWE wanted, you know, WWF wanted him, he would sign them, sign there too. So King Kong Bundy only lasted with New Japan about a year, and then he was WWE bound. Yeah. Mm. It's okay. You know, we're talking about Adrian, that he really had run with WWF, and he had, you know, his, you know, 3-year, 4-year run with New Japan, healthy run. And there was a time that the younger, you know, the Adrian Adonis, who was like a 26, 27, AWA, the era that made him star, like, you know, was Jesse Ventura and the first major title too. But he really worked main event in territory. Yeah.
But he was memorable. Anytime you saw him, he was always one of the wrestlers that you remembered after the show.
Yeah, yeah.
Stuck in your head.
So he had this, you know, strange charm to him, you know? Yeah. Real cocky, you know? But he could move.
Real cocky, but he also had... it was almost like physical comedy, like Buster Keaton or
Oh, okay.
you know what I
Because
mean?
he was taking bumps, you know, one big bump after another.
But he wasn't taking, well, he wasn't like a stuntman. They were kind of funny too, especially if it was a baby face getting his comeuppance against the
Yeah,
bad
like
guy.
the Hulk Hogan spot where, you know, by the rope on, just by the rope on the apron, and that Hulk Hogan gives you either punch or backhand slap, that he flips over the rope and come back and you t all tied up. You know what I'm saying?
So yeah, and he gets caught in the two top
Two
ropes.
ropes.
Yeah, it's almost like a comedy.
Yeah, and then when he did that, Hulk Hogan slapped him right and left. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Or
Oh,
he get thrown into the turnbuckle, and he would do
the
the Ric
flips.
Flair
Of course, of
or
course.
Shawn Michaels. It's the same style, same thing.
So that was like a classic or the textbook heel big bump kind of thing. Yeah. I had a lot of moves like that to run across the ring, you know, diagonally and give big bulldog, you know. Yeah. He had a lot of that.
There's a lot to learn. I think you can learn a
Yeah, I mean,
lot.
yeah, go study his tapes
Yeah,
today. Yes.
and it's amazing, like I said earlier, I mean, he wasn't in WWF for very long, and for how much he's talked about for being in there for what, 2 years?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm talking about the last run, not the initial run, but his last stint with WWF
Yeah.
is
But it
unfortunately.
was not like he was like a buried in, you know, opening card.
Oh no,
He
he was
did,
an
yeah, he
attraction as
did
well.
have, yeah, like a Roddy Piper, Adrian Adonis single match at WrestleMania. That's pretty high on card. It was just that his gimmick at the time was so terrible that that's how he, you know, how people remember him, you know.
He's also kind of like the prototype for what Goldust Dustin Rhodes would do later on. It was a similar idea as far
Yeah,
as the
but
character.
it works for some people. It doesn't work for some guys.
That's right.
Yeah. And because if Dusty Rhodes, American Dream Dusty Rhodes does that, he still look like American Dream Dusty Rhodes. And the Goldust Dustin Rhodes really exaggerated, made it into art form like a Hollywood movie and the quotes and all the, you know, gold thing come off from the ceilings, and it really made it special. But
Yeah, there was more depth to it.
Adrian's character was put together and was like a throw at him or something, you know.
Yeah, he was meant to be hated by as many people as possible.
I suppose, yeah. Still be managed by Jimmy Hart, and so it was as far as the card goes, it's pretty up there. But it obviously he wasn't enjoying it, you know. Yeah.
Well, it sounded like he really, when he got back on track with his life in the late 80s, and was really seemed to enjoy pro wrestling again.
Again, I felt it. I'm talking about spring of 88, but it was so unfortunate. It was just a couple months before he passed, you know? Yeah. Right when he had a great attitude again, and you know, I'm going in summer territory and going, you know, New Brunswick, you know, the Dupree territory, and spend summer there, you know. And then I'll be back in the summer, you know. I'll see you in the end of summer. He was gonna come back to New Japan, and and also, Brody thing happened only 2 weeks after his passing.
Oh, wow. Wow.
So all the news, all the wrestling news, started talking about, you
It's a
know, what happened
tragic
to Brody.
summer.
Yeah, same summer, only like a 2 weeks apart. Yeah.
On
Yeah.
Adonis, I mean, again, 34, that's so young. I mean, he's somebody who wrestled with a style that he could have wrestled for a very long time.
And also lasted with Japan for a real long time. He could retire in Japan, you know? Maybe turned babyface in Japan and the works Japan side at the end of his run. Never know, right?
Never know, unfortunately, but we can celebrate his work right now, and we can do it luckily with, you know, technology and
yeah,
YouTube.
Yeah, let's
and
find yeah, let's find more Adrian Adonis match on YouTube. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they may not have that many on WWE Network.
You might have to do some research. That's right.
Yeah, yeah, right. So they may have Adrian Adonis Bob Backlund title match from Madison Square Garden in there if you look for it.
Hmm.
Yeah. But his prime is elsewhere too. Old New Japan matches or the San Antonio matches, or if you find anything on Pacific Northwest that the real rookie years, he already had that, you know?
Mm.
Yeah. Or AWA matches. Yeah. There was Hulk Hogan against Adrian Adonis before WWE. It was AWA match, Hulk Hogan against Adrian, which is interesting. Yeah.
Very interesting. And it's always, I like thinking about what could have, you know,
what
could have been and how much he could have done. And again, we can take a look back.
Yeah,
and
now I think it's our role to, you know, tell today's audience, you know, because his history, his legacy has been pretty much overlooked. So, you know, let's remember Adrian Adonis and what a talent, you know, how talented he really was. And you can, you know, watch his match today and still pretty good. You know?
And you can realize
how
much he added to modern pro wrestling when I'm talking about.
I think
about
so.
What
yeah,
we see
very
today.
Innovative. Yeah.
Innovative for the time, but I mean, if you think about it now, it's pretty. Oh, it's almost like you think it's fundamental, but it was different and new and creative back then, and that's another big part of what he gave to pro wrestling, not just a entertainment factor, but he actually, you know, helped build
yeah,
the vocabulary.
Yeah, also have to have that the people, person who's watching the old footage, the person has to be somewhat have educated eyes for wrestling, because he'll be taking a lot of bumps and not much, I mean, not necessarily winning the match. You know what I'm saying?
Hmm.
Being heel, selling, and being creative. You know, when you're a kid, you know, if you sell that much, it's like, that guy's not good. You're getting beat, right?
Right. But there was something in his skill that anytime, at least for me, anytime you saw him on the screen, you couldn't really take your eyes off of him. There's something very magnetic
yeah, he
about
moved very well. Yeah.
Or his moved. Facial expressions or his reactions to who he was wrestling.
And throwing his sweat onto the crowd.
Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, how he interacted with the crowd. He was very much himself.
Yeah, it's like talking to the crowd like, your mother should have had an abortion. It's like, mad.
But these days, it's almost like that. It's the template for the perfect bad guy, that perfect heel. He could do whatever you asked of him, it seems like.
Yeah, I think he had influence on the young Paul Heyman too. See, when Paul Heyman was still young manager with cell phone, like initial cell phone, that's really big, like a walkie-talkie.
Mm-hmm.
He was Paulie Dangerously, the manager in Dying Day of AWA. They had run. Yeah, they traveled together.
Hmm.
They must have talked wrestling all night long.
Mm. I'm interested to hear if what Paul Heyman would have to say Adonis. Yeah,
yeah, that's interesting. So you never know how many people he has touched or mm-hmm. influenced, yeah.
And will continue to through, you know, hopefully us talking about him will spark some interest, and you can go online.
I sure hope so, because the video footage is there, and you can still watch him. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, why not?
I have such a fun memory on Adrian Adonis. Yeah,
he's gone too soon for sure, and he was very talented, and I think he gave a lot more to wrestling than we realize.
Right, right. Okay.
So, I think that we did a good job of covering Adrian Adonis's career. So, if anybody has questions or comments, anything about today's show or anything related to the show or fight game media in general, where can we find you, Fumi, on
Twitter at Fumihiko Dayo, FumihikoDayo, Fumihiko Dayo on Twitter, or just Fumi Saito on Facebook. Message me first.
And on Twitter, I'm at Justin M. Nipper, KNIPPER. That's it for this week. Until next time, Fumi, take it away.
So long from Tokyo.
Saito.